So spring seems to have sprung. At least there are hints and glimpses of better weather to come. And I hope you're enjoying the longer light evenings. Are you enjoying that? Good, good. I don't suppose you, it is nice to have these longer evenings, but you know what it's like on Palm Sunday morning, don't you? A lot of us grumble about losing an hour's sleep, don't we? But I think over Easter, actually, between Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday, we lost more than an hour. We lost 3 days. We lost 72 hours, roundabout. I mean, we gather on Palm Sunday to celebrate when the crowds cheering welcome Jesus to Jerusalem, full of expectation of what he might do and what he might do for the nation. Maybe he's this great new political leader. We meet on Maundy Thursday to remember that final meal with his friends and how the situation has changed, how his friends scatter as he is arrested. We gather on Good Friday. Some of us walk through Croxley. We remembered another crowd that called for his death. And we thought about how that death connects with our life today. Some of us gathered from Good Friday night right through to, I don't know what we call it, Easter Saturday, Black Saturday, praying, seeking God through the night. And on Sunday morning, we gathered last Sunday to celebrate the rising of Jesus from death and seeking to know God's new life for ourselves. But that leaves 3 days missing. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Disappointment Monday, challenge Tuesday, anointing Wednesday. As I've celebrated Easter through the years, it seems to me in our tradition we totally ignore those 3 days at times between Palm Sunday and Maundy Thursday. We don't gather often. They kind of pass us by. So in the next few weeks, actually the next couple of months, we're going to fill in those missing days. We're going to look at some of the teaching and events that happen on the Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday as Mark records them in his gospel. We're going to start today on Monday. Disappointment Monday. It's morning on Monday. Jesus arrived in Jerusalem the day before on Palm Sunday. He walks around the city, he takes in the sights, and then he leaves to spend the night in Bethany. On a Monday morning, he starts early. Maybe like so many today, that he wanted to get ahead of the day. He had no time to grab breakfast, so he thought he'd get it on the road. And there's no Costa, there's no Pret. He's not as your normal coffee or lunch outlets. So he looks for something as he travels along the road. And there he sees it, a fig tree. And it looks so promising, doesn't it? It's in full leaf. So he goes over it looking for fruit. But there is no fruit. It's not even the season for figs. And so he looks at it and he declares, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." Now we all have moments when we face disappointment in life. And I know we get grumpy when our tummy rumbles. But that seems a bit strong, doesn't it? It's not even the season for figs. Surely Jesus is aware of that. It just seems a bit of an overreaction. And yet here, Jesus is using this moment to dramatically remind people, of God's words long ago. God's words of judgment over the nation of Israel. given through the prophet, the holy man, Jeremiah. Jeremiah 8, verse 13. The God says to the people through Jeremiah, when I wanted to gather them, there were no figs on the tree. Even the leaves are withered. And what I gave them has passed from them. See, it's not about the tree. It's about the life of the nation. And the danger of false security. Oh, life looked okay. The tree of the nation, its leaves were green. But the truth was, there was no fruit. This declaration over the tree is about the disappointment of God over people's life and faith. My house will be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers. Jesus has a disappointing start to his Monday, and as the day progresses, the disappointment continues. He visits the temple, the heart of the nation's life, the heart of its worship, a place for people to come and express faith and encounter God. And that week is at the center of their national life as they celebrate Passover, as they express community together, as they know and want to know God's life, as they know again release and forgiveness. And yet this place, which is still vibrant and is supposed to be life-giving, has been turned into a national heritage attraction. Oh, it's vibrant and there are people coming and going. But it's life-stealing, not life-giving. Maybe you are a member of the National Trust. Anybody a member of the National Trust? Yeah? Anybody go to see these national heritage sites, yeah? Well, just imagine, you get to one of these places that you've been looking forward to going to, you've got your membership card, or you've got your entry ticket, but you know what it's like? When you get there, often the entrance is through the gift shop, and so is the exit. You know what I mean, don't you? You know exactly what I mean. Now, normally, I try to ignore the gift shop, but imagine you get to the entry gate and they say, oh, sorry, ticket's not enough. Membership card's got enough. You've got to buy the T-shirt. If you want to come and see Blenheim Palace, you've got to have Blenheim Palace T-shirt. If you want to go and see the Tower of London, you've got to have Tower of London T-shirt. Or you've got to buy that little gift and trinket, that fridge magnet. It'll enhance your experience here. You would be disappointed. You would have felt cheated. You would have felt let down. Well, that's what's happening at the temple. People have got to go through the gift shop before they go in. This is a place of prayer, but you can only go in if you've got the right stuff. You can only go in if you've got the right equipment. Oh, and they'd sell it to you. There's a market there for you. You'd sell it to you for the right price. You could only go in if you got the right things. And Jesus' disappointment over what is happening in this place, which is supposed to be so vibrant and life-giving, spills over and he overturns the gift stalls and he scatters the postcards and he tramples over the T-shirts. The temple has been at the heart of honouring God for 100 years. And the rituals they are celebrating this week, the Passover, go back even longer into their history. It's about security and certainty. Certainty that God is with them. The God who wanted to gather them. And the sad thing is, they continued on this pattern of life that they had inherited from the past, oblivious
to how God saw it. There was no fruit. It did not give life any more. It took life away.
I think it asks questions of our own life and faith. Where do we place our security and our certainty? Do we place it in things and patterns of life and practices and gatherings and diaries and programs? Are they still fruitful? Or do they just look good on the outside? Do they still bring life? Or is it just a comforting heritage from the past? Well, God is moving on and wants to do a new thing, to bring life to us and to bring life to others. Well, that's disappointing Monday. Next day, challenge Tuesday, they're back on the road into Jerusalem. And Peter notices the fig tree. And it's withered, dead, barren, even to the roots. Now, that's a remarkable thing. And Peter notices what has happened and points it out to Jesus and the others. But as usual, Peter misses the point. The point of this whole episode is about faith. Faith in God and where we place our trust. You know, the disciples, they were still learning this lesson later on that day. The disciples, even though they'd followed Jesus for 3 years, even if they'd seen him do remarkable things, for them their faith was still focused on the temple. Later on, as they're leaving the temple that day, they say, "Look, look, teacher, look, Jesus, look at these large stones. Look at these large buildings." They still thought this was the place where God was at work. But Jesus challenges them. He tries to help them understand what he's doing and what the events of the day before mean. He's clearing out of the temple. If anyone says to this mountain, "Go throw yourself into the sea," and believes in their heart, it will be done. It's a puzzling verse, actually. I've always found that a bit of a... There's a tendency for that to be quite a condemning verse about our faith. Because it seems such a huge thing to do, to move a mountain into the sea. And sometimes our faith, you know, isn't strong. That things do seem impossible. But I don't think that's what this verse is about. And it hinges on one word. Hinges on one word. This. This. Jesus isn't just talking about any old mountain. I mean, Mount Etna is any old mountain, and it's slowly sliding into the sea at about 40 millimetres a year. He's not talking about any old mountain. He's talking about this mountain, the mountain that is before them, the mountain on which the temple is built. Mount Zion, the temple mount, the heritage they relied on. The heritage that they thought was so strong could just be swept away with such ease. But then what would they be left to trust in? How would they encounter God and his life? How would they know community? How would they know forgiveness? Lisa said it's not about the buildings.
Church is about community and people. And faith is not about patterns and practices, although they're helpful. Below them all, though, has to be trust in the provision of God. See, this would have been shocking to them to say, look, none of this matters. None of this matters. If you want to know the God who gathers, if you want to know his life, if you want to know his forgiveness and release, it's not about this place. Whatever you ask for in prayer, believe you have received it and it will be yours. It's not about a place. It's not about a way of doing things. It's about trusting in a God who gathers us together, who shares his life, and in Jesus releases us to new life. Now, Easter was a wonderful weekend, and it was a real blessing to share in it this year. And many of you were moved and touched and sought after God. Many of you walked through the baptistry last week. But don't let it become a heritage. Don't let it just become a memory of a wonderful weekend. See, faith does not come from heritage alone. Faith does not survive on remembering what God has done in the past and keeping on doing the same thing, even if it's a week ago. It's sustained by an ongoing trust in the God who gathers us and provides us as we entrust ourselves to him. You see, alone, faith rooted in the memory of past events and heritage, I guarantee you, is a faith that will go missing. But a faith that is rooted in a trust of God that is woven through our lives, whether we feel secure or not, that faith will endure and continue to bear fruit, whether the seasons of life we are in feel right or not. That's the faith Jesus invites us to share in.